The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. It is time to get up with the new Fab Four. McShay's McBoard has four QBs right at the top. We'll tell you what makes sense and what does not. And then it's time to learn everything about these future stars. We'll tell you exactly who each of the QBs will remind you of when they get to the league. And the Steelers make the obvious decision, but that doesn't mean it wasn't a huge mistake. All that and more on this Football Friday as we get up with you, starting right now. From the Seaport, Greeny here, delighted you are there. We consider these like holidays. McShay's got the McDraft, the McBoard is out there, and we're ready to break it all down with you and look at the crew that is ready to do it. Dan Graziano is here to dispel all of our fun with facts. We got Lewis Riddick is ready. Mike T is making deals. And Matt Miller, our draft insider, is ready to go as we take a look at Todd McShay's Mock Draft 3.0, released last night. And here we go. No surprise at the very top, of course. It is Jacksonville taking Trevor Lawrence at number one. There's no reason to think that is going to change at any point in the process. At two, another quarterback. He has the Jets taking Zach Wilson, who completed 74% of his passes at BYU last season. That was second best in the country. At three, another quarterback, and this time in a trade. Carolina moving up to take Ohio State's Justin Fields. That is a change from the last mock when he had Carolina taking Trey Lance. McShay now has the North Dakota State quarterback going to the Falcons at four. Should all of this happen, it would be the first time in the history of the draft that quarterbacks went one, two, three, and four. And the fifth name at the quarterback position, as you see on the screen there, would be Mac Jones, who Todd has going to San Francisco. If that were to happen, it would be the fastest five quarterbacks that come off the board in the history of the common draft. So we will have Todd a little bit later, but let's start digesting some of what we have seen. And Lewis, let's just go to your biggest takeaway. As you look at the quarterbacks at the top of this list, what is your number one takeaway?
Look, I think the pick for Atlanta taking Trey Lance, I think, is an absolute slam dunk if that actually happens. And when I say slam dunk, I think I mean for Trey Lance, that kind of offense that Arthur Smith is going to install there in Atlanta is perfect for Trey. Run heavy, play action pass, deep shots down the field, plenty of movement, plenty of design rollouts. I mean, that's right in Trey Lance's wheelhouse. That's just what he did at North Dakota State. And he may not have to play right away, so he can sit and learn and really just kind of get his feet under him after having sat out all but one game in 2020. I think that would be absolutely perfect. The only two I have questions about is this. This is just in terms of fit. Look, I love Justin Fields. I just think Justin Fields would be perfect in the same type of scenario as Trey Lance. So I think to San Francisco, that would make more sense. Mac Jones to Carolina makes sense to me. Again, a team that's going to do some gun, work from under center, really be a drop-back passing type of team that really emphasizes the run game, play action. I think that would just be a perfect fit for Mac. He looked fantastic running that offense down to Senior Bowl. But all in all, hey, I love the movement. I love the drama at the top of this mock. I can't wait till we get to Cleveland, Greeny. I'm telling you, this is going to be fun.
Mike T, what is your number one takeaway looking at the quarterbacks at the top?
I think Todd nailed it. I think it's Zach Wilson over Sam Darnold. Zach Wilson, as you allude to, very accurate passer, dynamic playmaker. And the other benefit you're getting if you're the New York Jets, Greeny, is you're resetting the clock on a rookie contract, which are absolute steals. And when you compare that to what the Jets would have to guarantee for Sam Darnold, upwards of $25 million in the following year, this is an easy decision. I love Zach Wilson's ability to make plays, and this should set their franchise up for hopefully success. And he's a guy that could compete with Josh Allen down the road.
Yeah, it's worth repeating. That really is where the draft begins. We've known forever and will continue to that Trevor Lawrence is going number one. The Jets really have the first decision to make, and that will inform what a lot of other teams do. Matt Miller, our brand new draft insider, what's your number one takeaway from this mock?
Yeah, Greeny, I think it's the teams are being aggressive to go up the, and get these quarterbacks. Like you said, four in the top four has never happened before. Five in the top 10 has never happened before. And we see Carolina and San Francisco trading up to get their guys. I can remember not that long ago when teams were holding on to Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, waiting for the tide to turn on these quarterbacks. Now we're seeing in Todd's mock, teams said no. Teddy Bridgewater, we know the limitations. Jimmy Garoppolo, we know the limitations. Let's find that replacement. Let's identify the guy, go up and get him. It speaks to the philosophy in the NFL right now, but it also speaks to the talent of the five quarterbacks in this draft that teams would be willing to move up as high to get them, or the fact that at 1-2, teams are just willing to say, forget Sam Darnold, we're drafting Zach Wilson. So that movement at the quarterback position, I think, is really signifies where the league is going right now.
Yeah, that aggressiveness. You're talking to a lot of the same people, obviously, that Todd and Mel are talking to. Is that what you're hearing as well, that we should expect teams to be this level of aggressive, that we should expect the quarterbacks to go off the board this level of early?
Yeah, I think so. The key is Miami at number three, what they do at that spot, whether they try to trade it for a Deshaun Watson, whether they sell the pick to a team like Carolina wanting to come up. But I think the Panthers are a smart team to target as a move up. We heard they wanted to get involved in Matthew Stafford. They were very aggressive there. The next best quarterback option this offseason might be Deshaun Watson, but it also could be if Houston doesn't trade him. It could be trading up to that number three spot to get a Justin Fields or a Mac Jones, as the guys pointed out.
Yeah, and an important point to make there. Some of this will be determined by some of the moves that are yet to take place in free agency involving Deshaun Watson and maybe Dak Prescott and maybe Russell Wilson. We will see. Meanwhile, Lewis, let me come back to you, because I can hear all of the non-quarterbacks that I work with every single day screaming at us right now. Guys, it's not just the quarterbacks. So as we look at the rest of this mock draft, Lewis Riddick, aside from the QBs, what's the number one thing that stands out to you?
Yeah, I think it's the Philly selection there at six. I can just tell you this. If Philly's comes up and Ja'Marr Chase is on the board and they don't pick Ja'Marr Chase and they go with Kyle Pitts, and I like Kyle Pitts, I love Ja'Marr Chase, there will be riots in the streets of Philadelphia. They will burn down the city of brotherly love and they will march on the NovaCare complex, I promise you. I think recency bias is something that we all need to be very careful about, and that in this sense, look, we haven't seen Ja'Marr since 2019 when he absolutely ripped the SEC, and he ripped every single top corner in that division without any problem at all. This guy is a monster, and if he's sitting there at six and he's just waiting for you to pick him, and you have your choice between him and Devontae Smith, I think you better take one of them. Look, I'm telling you, look, I like Kyle Pitts. He's not Darren Waller. He's not George Kittle. He's a good weapon, but he's not of that category. And I think it would just be a huge mistake if Philadelphia passed on him if he was sitting there waiting for him.
A reminder, Ja'Marr Chase was the best receiver at LSU 2 years ago, sat out last year because of COVID. Justin Jefferson came into the league this past year and put up all-world kind of numbers. Chase was the better player the year before at LSU. Mike T., same question to you. Aside from the quarterbacks, what's your number one takeaway?
Ja'Marr Chase, he's the best wide receiver in this draft. And what's interesting, Greeny, when you talk to people around the league, how are the opt-outs going to impact decisions ultimately? Ja'Marr Chase, if he had played, may have been the best football player. He'd be in that discussion with Trevor Lawrence. As you just mentioned, he outplayed Justin Jefferson, who was dynamic for Minnesota. So ultimately, is it Devontae Smith or Ja'Marr Chase? And in the balance is going to be one guy played in Excel and Devontae Smith, another one opted out. And there's teams around the league that are really struggling on how to handle the opt-outs. And to me, that's going to be a fascinating dynamic as we get closer to the draft.
Quickly, I mean, you were a GM for two different teams. Mike, would it matter to you? Would the opt-out factor into your thinking?
I would drill down hard. I'd figure out, I want to know why you did it, who helped impact that decision, and go through their whole body of work. But if everything else checked out, I would not hold it against them. This was obviously an insidious virus. And again, Ja'Marr Chase very well may be the best player in this draft that's not a quarterback, and he may be too good of an opportunity to pass up.
And Matt, back to you. Same question. Aside from the quarterbacks, what's your number one takeaway?
Yeah, guys, the running backs, two of them coming off the board in the first round, Najee Harris from Alabama, Travis Etienne from Clemson. I thought we were devaluing running backs in the NFL. Last year, Clyde Edwards-Helaire goes at 32 out of LSU to Kansas City. And then this year, we see two dynamic players. I thought Etienne had a little bit of a down year in 2020. Najee Harris, he probably had the Heisman vote when we got down to the end of the regular season. Obviously, Devontae pulled away toward the end of the year. But seeing two running backs go in the first round, I don't think it's crazy, but it would be a little bit of a surprise just given how the NFL values that position and how deep the running back group is this year. There's a couple other guys out of North Carolina who are making some waves as well.
Yeah, lots to talk about there, and we will as we work our way towards it, about 8 weeks away from the draft. Outstanding there. Much more on this, and again, Todd will join us a little later. Meanwhile, let's get to the big NFL story from the day yesterday, and that was this. Ben Roethlisberger officially back with the Steelers for the coming season, a source telling our Adam Schefter that Roethlisberger willingly reduced his pay to $14 million this coming year from $19 million. In what is the last year of his contract to help lower the team's salary cap hit, Ben released a statement saying, quote, "It is my greatest honor to be a Pittsburgh Steeler and give my all for this organization. I'm grateful to be at this stage of my career and more than happy to adjust my contract in a way that best helps the team to address other players who are so vital to our success. I love this game and love to compete, and I believe in this team and my ability to deliver when called upon." And so Dan Graziano, my insider extraordinaire, gets up with us here this morning, as mentioned. What should we take away from this latest on Ben's contract?
Well, I'd like to see a few more details because it reminds me of a situation in Peyton Manning's final year in Denver where he took a pay cut of $4 million, but it all just got converted to incentives, and he made it all back when they won the Super Bowl. So I'm interested to see the document, but I'll worry about that on my time. What this means is Ben Roethlisberger's back for one more year, which is what he and the Steelers wanted. The problem is they're going to save $15 million in cap room, which is nice. They would have saved $19 million if they had cut him or if he had retired. I'm just not sure the $15 million does what they need it to do. This is a team with significant question marks at significant positions. Their center, Maurkice Pouncey, has retired. You see this list of free agents. They're a team that was projected over the cap before this all started, and they're still up against it. I don't know if they're going to bring back any of these four guys, and that doesn't even start to address the fact that they have young players like Minka Fitzpatrick and TJ Watt who are going to be in line for extensions. Ben Roethlisberger's back, which means they have a quarterback and a legendary one that they all love for one more year. I just think it's possible this is going to be the worst Steelers team he's ever been on, and at the best case scenario is they're going to have a lot of pressure on him, on Mike Tomlin, and a lot of young players and rookies to perform at a high level if they're going to contend.
All right, so that's an interesting look at the big picture there. Mike T, let's drill down. What do you think of this decision by the Steelers and Ben?
This is a bad decision this year and even worse next year. You are stopping progress, and we should celebrate Ben Roethlisberger, Hall of Famer, Mike Tomlin, Hall of Famer. Give them all the credit. But last year, he was 30th in the league in yards per pass attempt, and that matches the film. He can't get the ball down the field. You are stopping progress, Greeny. And when you look at Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, and Baker Mayfield, they're getting better. They're ascending. And by the time we get to next year, when Pittsburgh has a new quarterback, that gap will now be massive. They can't win a championship this year with him, and they're stopping progress in 2022 by having him back this season.
All right, so it is a really complicated circumstance. Lewis, what do you think they need to do there? The Steelers are not a team that rebuilds. They're a team that goes for it every single year. So they bring back Ben. What can they do, given all the restraints financially that Dan is talking about, what can they do to try and compete next year?
Look, I think first and foremost, if you listen to Mike Tomlin talk and listen to Kevin Colbert talk, the number one thing they need to do is fix this offensive line, because that's where they believe that everything started to crumble from the inside out on this football team late in the year last year, and they couldn't maintain any semblance of balance and take some pressure off of Ben Roethlisberger, given the fact that, look, we all know that his skills are not quite the same as what they are. That is where a huge part of their focus will be this year, and they feel as though if they can get that squared away to where they're at least respectable running the football, that they have enough weapons on the perimeter, even if Juju Smith-Schuster isn't back, to go ahead and be dynamic enough where they can put up points on the board. Look, Mike has always felt, that being Mike Tomlin, that the defense is going to be fine. They're going to take care of that side of the ball. TJ's still going to be there. Cam Hayward is still a tremendous, tremendous interior defensive player. They're going to get Devin Bush back. Minka's still in the fold. So they still feel as though they can play quality winning championship style football on that side of the ball. But taking care of this offensive line is priority one. And really, what else is their option at quarterback this year? They don't have any other options that they feel comfortable with yet. So I think right now they're just trying to buy some time until they can address it then in a year from now while still competing in 2021.
Yeah, look, they had a lot of problems this year. As I watched them down the stretch of the season, it seemed to me quarterback was comparatively low on the list of things that were holding them back. We will see where they wind up going. Meanwhile, lots of other news as we work towards the end of the league year. Graziano, let's run the hurry up. Let's start with Dak. What's the latest?
Dak Prescott and the Cowboys continue to work on trying to get a long-term extension. They have had recent talks. I believe they have talked this week. There is a deadline coming up on Tuesday. That's the last day on which teams can apply the franchise tag. Dallas will do that if they don't have a long-term deal in place by then. And I am told that it will, for the second year in a row, be the exclusive franchise tag, which means no other team will be able to offer Dak Prescott a contract. Cowboys are serious about wanting to keep him. The Seahawks are serious about wanting to keep Russell Wilson. There's a lot of smoke around this situation, obviously, with Wilson saying he doesn't want a trade, but then in the next breath giving a list of four teams that he would consider a trade to. Still looks unlikely that Seattle would deal him at this point. There's still a relationship between Wilson and the team, and so they're in contact with each other and working on ways to make things better. This stands in stark juxtaposition to the Houston Texans and Deshaun Watson, who do not have a strong relationship right now. Watson has said he wants out of Houston. The Houston Texans are telling interested teams they're not interested in trading him. And I am told by sources close to this situation that the Texans are just as dug in as Watson, to the point where they're actually saying they're willing to let him sit out the season if that's really what he wants to do. They would recoup some money in terms of his salary, possibly some signing bonus money. So this looks like a serious standoff that could last a little while.
Yeah, you're not the only one who thinks that. On the Huddle and Flow podcast, Jalen Ramsey, who's someone who knows a little bit about this, was on that podcast, and he was talking about just how serious Deshaun is in wanting to be traded. This is what Ramsey said.
But I highly doubt he'll ever, you know, suit up in a Texans uniform again. He's very serious. I would say he's very serious. This is his legacy. Yeah, he should be serious.
So to be clear, Dan Graziano, just he knows of which he speaks, right? Why is Jalen Ramsey such an interesting person to be commenting on this situation?
Well, they have the same agent, and so, you know, that they're in contact with each other through that connection. And, you know, Jalen Ramsey did this. He was in Jacksonville, didn't like it there, didn't like the way the organization was treating him, and he let it be known he wanted out, and eventually they felt like they were forced to trade him to the Los Angeles Rams. They got two first-round picks, and it was a good deal for them, but he did force his way out. So he knows whereof he speaks, and he's kind of the one who sort of wrote a bit of a playbook for Deshaun Watson if he does want to continue to force this situation and force his way out of Houston.
Now, Mike Tannenbaum, you made a very interesting point in our meeting this morning about the individual who is making those decisions right now in Houston, the history that he and you share, and why you could see him taking this thing all the way. I'd love you to share that.
Greeting. Nick Caserio for 18 years sat right next to Coach Belichick, and I'm using this description in a very positive way as a leader. Coach Belichick would make decisions in a sober, dispassionate, emotionless way. Whatever is best for the football team is what we're going to do, and we are going to ignore the noise. If there's one person in the NFL who I think has the makeup to ride this out the entire year, it's Nick Caserio. After 18 years of watching arguably the all-time best do it, I think Nick will be unaffected by all the noise. I think he's the captain of this ship, and this could go the entire year. Dan alluded to the juxtaposition of the two sides right now, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is ultimately Carson Palmer Part 2, where Deshaun Watson doesn't play this year and he's not traded.
It would look, at the end of the day, it's in no one's best interest for great football players not to play football. So that's why I sort of shake my head. I would hate to see that. But you see the two sides dug in. Lewis Riddick, what do you think?
I think this is ridiculous. I mean, what point is Houston proven by doing that? You're just going to make him sit. You're not going to recoup anything for him in return. Your football team right now is devoid of talent. You don't have the assets to improve the football team. So you're just basically saying, we're just going to junk this year. We're going to junk this year, and we'll see what happens next year, simply because we don't want to establish the precedent of star players who are disappointed in how we do things saying that they want to try and then force their way out of town. Look, this is a situation where I think if people are really soberingly honest with themselves, that they created. Houston created this issue here. There had to have been a massive breakdown in communication, given what we know about Deshaun Watson. He wouldn't just up out of nowhere pull this out of his rear end and go, hey, you know what? I just don't want to play for you now because I just figured out there's something better that I want to do. And this isn't just a single situation. This is a systemic issue that's been happening with their star players for a long time. So instead of people here being worrying about precedent and worrying about sending Deshaun a message and let's just stand our ground and make him hold out and recoup his money and let's just see if he's going to take this all the way like Carson and threaten to leave, How about you start thinking about maybe rebuilding your football team and rebuilding the trust of not only the players in the locker room, but other players who are looking at your organization going, I don't want any parts of going anywhere like that. I don't want any parts where every historically great player in this organization rips you once they leave there. They absolutely, that cannot be just a coincidence that that is happening. It can't be. So I think, you know what, they better be pretty honest with themselves about why they find themselves in this situation, because if they don't, then it's just going to repeat itself over and over and over again. And aren't you in this business to win?
It's extremely well said. I think it's what a lot of people think. It's worth reminding you, in case you don't know, Nick Caserio was not there for any of this. He's a brand new general manager who kind of walked into the middle of the situation. The systemic problems that seem to be there go all the way to the top of the organization, and that has not changed. Okay, we are just getting rolling here on Get Up This Morning. Busy we will be. Unlike the Texans, the Seahawks are answering calls about Russell Wilson. What is stopping them from trading him? Are they about to make a huge mistake? And back to McShay's McBoard, it's not exactly a McDunk. Wait until you hear how risky it is to draft a quarterback in the first round.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
All right, we're back on Get Up. Lewis Riddick, what do we think of this? J.J. Watt getting creative with his post-workout recovery, sitting in a frozen lake. How do we feel about that?
Look, man, you know what I was thinking? I'm sitting there, first of all, I'm thinking, like, what's he sitting on? And, like, all right, so if you cut through the ice and you're in the water, is he treading water? I mean, is there something underneath them that's holding him up? Why isn't he using his arm? J.J. trying to be a member of SEAL Team 6? I mean, what else is he going after now? I mean, but I thought, hey, you know what? I'm not going to knock it, but I ain't going to try it. I know that.
You got a friend in me on that one for sure. All right. J.J. Watt is nuts. Coming up, we roll the dice. Diving into Todd McShay's brand new mock draft. Next.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We are back on Get Up, and as you well know, the quarterback position is the most important in all of team sports. And every year at the draft, a whole bunch of different teams look to solve their problems there. But hitting on a quarterback early in the draft, while on one hand it can lead to great long-term success, history shows that drafting a quarterback is the ultimate in risky business. For every Patrick Mahomes, for every Deshaun Watson, there is a Josh Rosen and a Johnny Manziel. When they tell you drafting a quarterback in the first round is a 50-50 proposition, they are actually being generous. Fewer than half the quarterbacks drafted in round one wind up making a single Pro Bowl, not one. And here are some more incredible numbers. Only 40% of first-round quarterbacks wind up signing a second contract with the team that took them.
With the second pick, the Philadelphia Eagles select Carson Wentz.
When Carson Wentz said, bye, Eagles, bye, it ushered in this. Of the 22 quarterbacks drafted in round one between 2009 and 2016, not a single one of them remains on the team that drafted them. That's right, none.
With the 10th pick, the Kansas City Chiefs select Patrick Mahomes, the second.
There have been 37 quarterbacks drafted in the first round since 2009. That's 12 drafts. Mahomes is the only one among them to win a Super Bowl as a starter. Jared Goff and Cam Newton are the only others to even reach one. The highest graded quarterbacks of the last 10 years are Andrew Luck, Jameis Winston, RG3, and Blaine Gabbert. Luck has since retired. None of the other three were starters this season. So, if you think there is anything about this that is an exact science, think again. Being drafted in the first round doesn't guarantee you a thing. And so, once again, if you're just joining us, Todd McShay releasing his mock draft 3.0, and he has quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3, and 4, and a total of 5 of them, as you see on the screen there, with Mac Jones going in the top 9. Neither of those two things have ever happened before. And so let's talk about risk. And again, Matt Miller, our brand new draft insider, is with us here. Of those projected quarterbacks, which one do you feel comes with the highest risk?
Yeah, Greeny, I love Trey Lance, but I think you have to talk about risk here because of 17 starts at North Dakota State, so not even at the FCS level. So that brings some risk to me. Now, the athletic traits are amazing, but lack of experience, 16 of those starts in 1 year, which he was electric, but one start this year against Central Arkansas where he did not look his best. So I think that is a concern. The athleticism, will it translate right away? I do think Trey would benefit by going somewhere where he can sit behind a Matt Ryan, a Teddy Bridgewater, a Jimmy Garoppolo, where he doesn't have to play right away. You see what he does with the ball in his hands, but there is going to be an acclimation period. I know Bruce Arians says you got to risk it for the biscuit. You might be doing that with Trey Lance this early in a mock draft.
It is worth making sure everyone is aware when we say he only played one game this past year. His team only played one game this past year. They basically opted out of the season but scheduled one game primarily as a showcase for him. So the most unusual circumstance that we have ever seen. Mike Tannenbaum, which of these guys comes with the biggest risk to you?
Totally agree with what Matt just said, which is Trey Lance only playing one game this year. And that's where I think, as Todd and Lewis both alluded to, that if he goes to a place like Atlanta, he could sit for a year and develop. In scouting circles, there's a bedrock principle about how every 10 games you're going to improve. Steve Young talks about it. Bill Parcells talks about it. I mean, it'd be like somebody crazy enough to trade up for Mark Sanchez, who only started 13 games his junior year. By the way, let the record show, he only had 10 interceptions. Who knew that he would enjoy turning the ball over as much as he did once he got to the next level? All seriousness, that was our concern.
See, Sanchez is watching, and you deserve it. That's what just happened. Sanchez is watching, and that's why he froze your signal, because you speak ill of him so unfairly. And to be clear, in case anyone isn't aware, the one who traded up to take Sanchez in the draft was that man, Mike Tannenbaum. Lewis, as we look at these guys in this draft, which one to you comes with the most risk?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Justin Fields, especially if a team moves up to draft him in the top 5. And the reason why I say this is this. Look, I think Justin, without knowing him personally yet, and can't wait to watch him throw and go to his pro day and talk to his coaches. Without knowing him, I just wonder why he struggles so much with defenses who are very good at taking away read number one, read number two, a la the Northwestern game, you know, late in the football season. That was something that really stood out to me. He looked like he didn't have enough answers, whether it be he himself, whether the offense didn't have enough of them built in, but it just looked like he froze and panicked and started making bad decisions when it wasn't so clear and easy and defined for him. And I just want to dig into that a little bit more and find out, what is that about? Is that about him? Is that about the offense? Is that about them not allowing him to do certain things in the offense? What was that? Because quite honestly, when I watched Trey Lance play, although it's against a lower level of competition and he didn't play in 2020, I didn't see that. I saw him having answers. I see Mac Jones have answers. I see Zach Wilson have answers when the obvious one isn't there. So that's what would concern me until I find out more about Justin.
We will talk much more about all these guys, obviously, as we work our way there. But I know if you're watching these and you haven't seen much of these players, you're wondering, well, what do they look like? What are they going to be on the next level? So let's do that. Matt, give me a comparison. Who is Justin Fields on the pro level?
Yeah, guys, I look at Justin Fields, 6'2", 6'3", 225 pounds. I see a more athletic Dak Prescott. To Lewis's point, yes, we have to see him work a little bit better off that first read, but he is a great dual threat quarterback. Go back to his true freshman year at Georgia, the way they used him as a runner. Ohio State did a great job rolling him out, and he can hit every level of the field as a thrower.
Mike T, give me the comparison for Zach Wilson. Who is he on the next level?
You know, I'm going to go there, Greeny. He's a poor man's Patrick Mahomes. I saw him in person a couple months ago. I thought he was a little bit more like Jimmy Garoppolo. The more you watch him on tape, he is a dynamic playmaker. And when he gets outside the pocket, his accuracy outside the numbers, 20 yards or more down the field, is remarkable. There's really no comparison besides Patrick Mahomes.
And then, Lewis, to you, how about Mac Jones? Give me the NFL comp on Mac Jones.
Yeah, I'm going to take Jimmy Garoppolo and say that this is what Mac Jones is, just from a style perspective, meaning this, he's going to do his best work in the pocket. Can he get outside the pocket and be serviceable if he needs to, as far as extending plays or running the occasional boot or some kind of dash, some kind of design dash action to get him outside the pocket? Yeah, but he's going to do his best work in the pocket, where he's going to use all the tools mentally to get the ball where it needs to be put, throw it with tremendous touch and accuracy. Look, I think the guy's just a surgeon as far as a pocket passer is concerned.
But so let's talk about the issue of the mobility, because as we put together amongst the quarterbacks who've been drafted over the last 5 or 6 years, these are the ones with the highest total QBR. And one of the things that they all have in common is their ability to make plays with their legs, which is such an incredibly important piece of the evaluation today. Matt Miller, again, you make your living in this, in this draft stuff. Like, where is that now? 15 years ago, Mac Jones would have been a top two pick and no one would have been talking about it. How important is that in the evaluation process for NFL teams right now?
You know, I think it's a bigger point than the supporting cast he had at Alabama, which gets brought up a lot. The four first-round wide receivers that he'll eventually have, Najee Harris in the backfield. I think it is the mobility. And as our guy Himbo texted me this morning, 75% more yards when he's in the pocket than when he's outside the pocket. Some of that comes back to what Lewis said earlier about Justin Fields. Can he do it, or was it something that he wasn't asked to do at Alabama, where they had that great offensive line? He was able to stay in the pocket, survey the field. Also, a lot of play action in their game, so he was able to work off of that. So I think it is a big thing. There will be teams that look at Mac Jones and say, no, that's not the style of football we want to play anymore. We want people who can move, who can create on their own, like a Patrick Mahomes, like a Deshaun Watson. And when you look at the other four quarterbacks that we mentioned as first-round picks, Trevor Lawrence, a great athlete out of Clemson. Trey Lance, we saw the clips earlier, a great athlete out of North Dakota State. We know what Justin Fields can do at Ohio State. We know what Zach Wilson can do at BYU. Mac Jones does not give you that same element of play, even though he is poised within the pocket.
Mike T, we've talked about this before. You love him.
I do. And Lewis and I were in Mobile a couple weeks ago. I think he's a functional athlete, much the way Matt Ryan is. And what I like about him, when he's off schedule, his eyes are down the field, and he can make plays that people don't really think he can outside the numbers. And he was much more productive this year, Greeny, with less to work with than Tua was a year ago with a lot more weapons. So he's not a great athlete, I agree with Matt, but he's twitchier than you think. And because he has good arm strength and he has functional athleticism, he will be able to play well in the pros. And I think ultimately his ceiling is a little bit higher than of Matt Ryan's.
And it's, you know, Lewis, I can't help but wonder, there's got to be people watching this conversation saying that everyone does realize that Tom Brady just won the Super Bowl, right? And Mac Jones could run circles around Tom Brady right now, and Brady has won 7 Super Bowls. So as we make these evaluations, Lewis, I mean, how important should that be?
Look, I think it's something that you want ideally. And I think it's also, this mobility issue is a function of what quarterbacks are looking like in high school and in college, and really what you have to choose from at this point. That's just a function of what, you know, how people are evolving and how the quarterback position is evolving at lower levels. Not necessarily, I don't believe, because guys who are less mobile and who are more inclined to be pocket passers can't win in the NFL, because in the NFL, it's still greeny. It's still about having answers with your mind, being able to figure stuff out pre-snap, and as soon as you were early into your dropback, being able to decipher what has happened, what is different than what I saw pre-snap, and where does this ball need to get to, and can I get it there and put it in situations where the weapons who I hope I have around me can do stuff with it. This young man can do that. When you talk to his coaches down at Alabama, they will tell you he has answers. And the more answers you give him, the better it is, because he has no limits from a mental standpoint as far as all the different things you can give him to help him in the course of a football game. And I think that speaks volumes for his projection going into the NFL, because the NFL is about – and the NFL, as much as it is an athletic game, it's a thinking man's game at the quarterback position, because at some point in time, the athletic ability can cancel out, and we saw that in the Super Bowl. Sometimes the other team has good athletes too. You better be able to think your way through it and be able to figure stuff out. And look, Patrick Mahomes is doing that right now, right? He's taking his game to another level mentally as well, which is so scary. But Mac Jones will be just fine. Put him in the right system.
Matt, quick final thought. Go.
Yeah, I'm with Lewis. Get him in the right system. Carolina, San Francisco, somewhere where they will let him play within the pocket, where they have weapons, the ball can come out quickly, and you can let those playmakers go make their plays where he doesn't have to create everything on his own.
And I will say this, just maybe it's part of it is the Saban-Belichick connection. I have felt that guy has New England written all over him for a very long time. We will see as we continue. Is the situation in Seattle worse than we thought? What does Lewis think about Russell Wilson's list? We'll talk about that and more. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Fight night tomorrow. Don't miss it. UFC 259. The card is stacked. Three titles on the line, including the main event between light heavyweight champion Jan Blachowicz and middleweight champion Israel Adesanya. The prelims start at 8 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Plus, and ESPN Deportes. And the main card begins 10 Eastern on pay-per-view. To order in English or Spanish, go to ESPNPlus.com/PPV. All right, back to the NFL we go. And as the quarterback carousel continues to spin, will Russell Wilson be the next one on the move? I will remind you, his agent went on the record with Shefty and listed four teams he'd be interested in playing for were he to be traded. The question is there any real chance the Seahawks are going to trade him? They said yesterday they're accepting phone calls, which is one thing to pay close attention to. Dan Graziano, what are we hearing?
Yeah, look, it's not nothing. Obviously, there's something going on here in terms of dissatisfaction with Russell Wilson. If there's a list of potential teams, that means he's at least imagining himself elsewhere besides Seattle. But at this point, it doesn't seem realistic for the Seahawks to trade him. I know talking to people there, they have not proceeded down a path this offseason of, oh, what happens if we trade him? Who do we get at quarterback? That's not on their minds. The finances of it don't work at all. It'd be a $39 million dead salary cap hit if they did trade him. And look, I mean, it's a player that he wants to win. He's made it clear he wants things to be better around him in Seattle. So it's still salvageable. It's not a Deshaun Watson situation. I had a GM once tell me, I always answer my phone in case someone has a better idea than I do. So the fact that Seattle's picking up the phone doesn't necessarily mean they're desperate to unload their quarterback. I think it's more likely than not, far more likely than not, that he plays for the Seahawks this year.
I understand that, but it's one thing to be answering your phone. It's another thing to be willing to publicly say so. So, look, something is going on. I think that's what we take away from this, right, Lewis? Something is going on here. So when the agent goes on the record with Shefty and says, here are four teams Russell would be interested in a trade to, what does that say to you, Lewis Riddick?
It says to me, look, that Russell right now obviously is not happy with the way he sees things going and how he views himself and how he, you know, currently in his situation, and how he potentially views himself at those other football teams. And he thinks that it would be, you know, a better situation for him. And then if you listen to the reports, and look, we haven't heard anything specifically from Russell on the record right now recently about this situation. It sounds like he views himself one way, and he feels as though his upside is going to be capped if he stays in the current situation and it doesn't improve in a way in which he likes. Namely, that the offense is really put in his hands and he's allowed to be the one that really decides how it goes. And it sounds like Seattle's not willing to do that, especially considering how late in the year last year, when the offense was in his hands, he wasn't able to really, quote unquote, carry the football team the way he had been doing early on in the football season. So I think they have two different views about it. You know, in many conversations that I had with Pete Carroll in different forms, whether it be, you know, production calls or on NFL Live when we were at the Combine, this is a guy who really does believe in a run-first mantra, heavy play-action-pass type mantra. He believes in balance. He doesn't believe, I don't believe, fundamentally, in just putting it all on the quarterback. And I think Russ is at a point where he feels as though, I deserve to have it on me. I deserve to get that kind of, you know, that kind of respect. And I don't believe I'm going to get it here, and I think these other places would give that to me. So I think that's something that he's putting out there. He's using roundabout ways of doing it and having other people speak for him. But I think that's legit, and we'll see what happens ultimately, whether or not he changes teams.
Let's go back to the other part of this, Mike T. Again, having been a general manager yourself in two different places, the whole we're answering phone calls when they ring part of this, I do find fascinating. Because I can tell, I mean, Kansas City isn't answering the phone if people are calling about Patrick Mahomes, right? So there's some distinction to be had here. What do you see going on right now? What do you imagine is going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, context is everything, which is John Schneider and Pete Carroll have to answer the phone because Russell Wilson's 32 years old. At the same time, what you need to be doing, Greeny, is you have to sit down with Russell Wilson and his agent and say, what is wrong and how can we fix it? We need to stand shoulder to shoulder and move forward. And I think fundamentally, this is a resource allocation discussion. Remarkably, right now, Seattle has three veteran players on offense. That's really remarkable. And they just gave up two first-round picks for Jamal Adams, another defensive player. Russell Wilson is seeing all these points score. Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes. He wants to do the same thing. So what's really important is you do have to look out for the long-term interest of your franchise if there's a deal that you just can't turn down. But more importantly, you have to work at solving problems. Get out of your comfort zone and say, hey, we got to fix this together. What do we need to do to move forward?
The question is, do they have the beginning of an impasse that they cannot solve? That, to your point, Graziano, and I'll give you the final word here, it isn't the Deshaun Watson situation yet, but does it feel like it could turn into that eventually? And if so, are they better off getting ahead of it rather than letting it hit them?
Well, again, better off is a relative term. If they were to make the move this offseason, it would set them back significantly in terms of their salary cap and their finances. So you'd effectively be white flagging a season. And I know from having talked to Pete Carroll in the past, that is not something he believes in doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth pointing out that we did not think Jared Goff's contract was tradable. We didn't think they could move on from him, and they did. Teams can figure out ways to do things if they want to. Let's keep a close eye on it. I know it's different. We'll come back to it. I didn't mean to make it the same. I'm just
it's
saying
bigger.
Unlikely things seem to happen in the NFL lately all the time. Let me leave that there for the moment because I got to show you a couple of the huge games last night. Selection Sunday is around the corner. We had Jared Butler at number three Baylor taking on Oklahoma State, and it was the Jared Butler show. Look at him here under 3 minutes left in the first half with the jam, and that's Baylor up by 11. And it's Oklahoma State with the ball, and now we're going the other way, and it's Butler in the corner for three. Baylor is up by 9. Butler would score 22, 8 of 14 from the floor with under 3 minutes to go. They're up by 4, and he's putting it away. Baylor wins it 81-70, a big win for them as we work our way towards the tournament. Meanwhile, number two in the country, Michigan, was on the floor against their rival Michigan State. Michigan coming off a bad loss the other night. Middle of the first half, Michigan is up by 5, and look at Hunter Dickinson, the big man, that little silky left hand, an 11-point lead in the first half, and they would never look back. It's a 15-point game, and then this happens. It's Dickinson on the dunk. Michigan is pulling away. Into the second half we go. It's a 15-point game. That's Franz Wagner with the three. Michigan clinches the Big Ten regular season championship with a 19-point win over their rivals. And after clinching that, Michigan is closing in on a one seed. Our BPI gives the Wolverines a 62% chance to earn a top seed. That would make Juwan Howard the fourth coach to get a one seed in his very first NCAA tournament. And, stunningly, the first one not named Bill.
How about that? As tomorrow, our full day of college basketball across all the networks is highlighted by these two key matchups on ESPN. Number 4, Illinois, taking on number 7, Ohio State. And then, of course, Duke and Carolina. It's always outstanding. That one's a sonic blockbuster. All the action tomorrow on ESPN. Coming up, we're diving into McShay's new McBoard, including the biggest question: should the Jets trade Sam Darnold and draft his replacement? McShay will join us, and Mark Sanchez will join us. He knows a little bit about being a young star quarterback in New York out of USC. Sanchez Live as we continue on ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.